The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
On this episode of the History Worth Saving podcast, we're talking to an American hero, First Lieutenant Patrick Claiborne McCleary III, Cleve, as he's known to his friends and to his colleagues. Cleve was in the Vietnam War, and while some of his contemporaries were staging anti-war protests and desecrating the American flag, this Lowcountry native, as he describes himself, was serving as a platoon leader in the 1st Reconnaissance Battalion. And on that battalion's 19th patrol, the unit was attacked by the Viet Cong. Lieutenant McCleary, he was seriously wounded. He lost his left arm and his left eye. Yet he continued to lead his men. The numerous surgeries, the long recovery period that followed could have turned him. But he faced his rehabilitation with the characteristic determination that is so ingrained in the few and the proud, the United States Marines. Please welcome a true American hero, and he's going to correct me. He's going to say, I didn't lose my arm and my eye. I left it. Isn't that right, Cleve?
That's right.
Welcome to the show. I met you out at Marine Corps Air Station Miramar. I was there doing an air show. It's 7 in the morning. You walk into the briefing room, and this hush fell over. And listen, this is a room full of Marines, battle-hardened Marines, and civilian air show performers, the Blue Angels, everybody's in there. And when you walked in there, everything changed. Everything changed. And I remember this young Marine standing up, and he said, how did you lose your arm? And I want you to take it from right there just to set the tone, because when you say this, it just sets everything straight.
I appreciate that, man. It's great to be with you. That was a great time out there. Chaplain Beardog from the Philippines had me out there and had me all over the country. And you talk about the Blue Angels, and I got a note from them yesterday and a little sticker they sent me that they give out, put on your phone or whatever, and I've got it on the back of my phone right now. Glad to be here.
They think so much of you that they sent you a sticker of themselves. Isn't that great? That's just like a fighter pilot, isn't it?
When you fly upside down 500 miles an hour, 17 inches apart, you are glad to be anywhere, I guarantee you.
That's right.
And I'm glad to be with you today, and I appreciate what you're doing, man. It's really great.
Well, tell me that story about that 19th patrol, will you? Will you take us back to that time so everybody can get a little taste of it? Because it's not who you are, but it speaks volume of your character.
Oh, well, Street March of 68 is my wife's birthday, so I don't have any trouble remembering it, but it's Wilna Hill in Vietnam is an area that very few people have been in and just covered with the enemy. We were supposed to be a big operation. It all got canceled, and my recon team got left out there by themselves, and I had a suicide squad hit us. And I carried a plunger pit, got above that, had my radio man McCormick to my left, and three men in a foxhole to my right, and about 8 men in a bomb crater back behind me. And they say anywhere 400, 500, 600 enemy NVAs hit us that night, and I shot one of them right in front of me. He fell in the hole with me with a satchel charge, exploded, blew me out. As I'd gone through there, I reached back with shotgun and realized more of it gone. And looked to my left, my radio man, McCormick, was dead or unconscious at the time. I wasn't sure which. And heard my screaming on the right crowd. And what happened? A grenade came near a foxhole. A young Marine, PFC Ralph Johnson from Burke High School in Charleston, the only South Carolina I had. Ralph jumped on a grenade, covered it with his stomach, blew himself in half to save my life and the life of another Marine with him. And If he hadn't done that, I wouldn't be here today. Later, he received the Congressional Medal of Honor. And we named a VA hospital in Charleston after him, a street in Charleston after him. And 4 years ago, named a $4 billion destroyer, which is out in Seattle. And 6,500 people came for the commission there we had in Charleston. And my congressman had a lot to do to get it brought from San Diego to Charleston. But I appreciate that. But I tried to get back behind me. We had eight men fighting and going back to where they were. Another grenade hit me in the legs, took my legs out from under me. And I thought it was all over. Well, I guarantee you, a Rod Hunter from Alaska came and knelt down by me. We were just picking in the office and came up a hill. Bob Lucas from Fort Worth, Texas came and knelt by me. Bob ran on the, got on the radio and called for choppers. The pilot said he couldn't get there to daylight. He said, tell him, forget it. We've been throwing rocks down the side of the hill because I had a grenade, so won't anybody be left in daylight. Pilots reconsidered. 3 a.m., the first bird landed. They put me two dead, five wounded on that chopper. That helicopter lifted. The next one landed. The rest of my men grabbed hold. Right as that bird lifted, about 150 enemy just covered the hill. Five more minutes, probably nobody got off that hill alive. Flew up to the dying, and from there to Japan, and from there to Bethesda, Maryland. And 46 operations and 2.5 years in the hospital. I'm talking with you today. And God had a purpose and a plan for my life. And I had two dead and 11 wounded out of 13. And my men fought hard. And God had a purpose and a plan for my life. It's good to be talking with you. I guarantee you.
We're glad you're here. Now, you are a very striking individual when you stand up there, especially in front of a group of fellow soldiers and Marines and sailors and airmen. There is something that you say that I think is so poignant, and I'd hope you would repeat it here today, that in a world of give and take,
yeah,
I'll let you finish it.
Okay. While I was in the hospital, a men got together and sent a plaque to me, and it actually got it off the back of a C-Rat box that I had up in my tent in Vietnam, and they copied it and put it on a metal brass shell that had been melted down and put it on a piece of wood. I got it hanging in my office right now. And on that plaque it said, in this world of give and take, there are not enough people willing to give what it takes. And I just thank God for people like you that willing to give what it takes for our faith, for our flag, for our country, for our young people, for the way of life we know and enjoy so well because of great folks like you. And it's great to talk with you, Matt.
Well, listen, I think it's the other way around, Klieb. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing a little bit about this. What do you see? What do you see when you look out your window right now at our country? I mean, obviously, we've been divided. We've been through a tumultuous period with this election, and it's still not over yet as we're recording all of this. But what do you see when you look out there right now, and what do you want folks to know?
Well, I think I'm going to use a scripture first. I was reading about 3:30 this morning. I look at the ocean. My family's been in this area since 1700. George Washington saved my family when he came through in 1798. And this is a great country. And boy, we've been blessed. And Ephesians, it says, God raised Christ from death, set him on a throne in deep heaven, in charge of running the universe, everything from galaxies to all governments. No name, no power, exempt from his rule. And not just for the time being, but forever. He is in charge of it all. He's got the final word on everything. Ephesians 1:20-22. I mean, God's in charge. And we just don't need to panic and worry about it. Who's elected? Who does this? Who does that? God knows it all. And he's in charge of it all. And you know, the military verse in Psalms, they call it the soldier psalm or the Marine psalm, the 91st psalm. And just to prove that God is an authority that comes from Romans, but just a story, and you do stories about small towns and people and getting to know people. And somebody sent me this just a few days ago, but a small town in Texas, Seadrift in World War II, 52 soldiers went from Seadrift to serve in World War II. Everybody served back then. And their photos were placed in a church picture frame with the 91st Psalm. and 15 to 20 people a day went in and prayed by name for those 52 soldiers. God heard their prayers, and not a single son of Seadrift was killed. All 52 came home safely from the battlefields of Europe, South Pacific, and the Far East, in spite of the fact that on these fronts, many hundreds of thousands lost their lives. And man, that's just the power of the prayer. And I wish somebody had that 91st Psalm being prayed over me. I wouldn't have lost those two men that night. But God answers prayer, and we need to look to Him for guidance and leadership in this country, no question about it.
How important was your faith to you before Vietnam?
I believed in God and went to Sunday school and church, didn't drink, didn't smoke. I was an all-American type boy. But I had it all in my head. I had nothing in my heart. And God doesn't cause things, but He allows things. And if my feet hadn't been knocked out from under me and I hadn't looked up, I don't know if I'd have come to the Lord or not. You know, when God allows things to be taken from you, He gives you a little extra. And I went out one night. We came home from the hospital from surgery in Bethesda, and I saw one of my heroes who's going to be out at the football stadium that night, Bobby Richardson. Went out to hear Bobby and a preacher guy. I didn't like the way he looked. He had a Yankee accent, didn't like anything about him, from Muskegon, Michigan. Billy Zioli brought a message, and in his message he said, there are two kind of fools in this world, a fool for Christ and a fool for others. And he said, whose fool are you? I knew that night whose fool I'd been. And that night, my wife and I went forward and knelt and prayed and confessed our sins in a very personal way, invited the Lord to come in our hearts. And that's where I got the real faith and real belief that I have. And I've tried to share that to schools and prisons and military bases all over the country. And just give people hope that comes to that personal relationship with a living Savior.
I wanted to get into this a little bit because I think you've just about received every award they've ever made for a soldier: the Silver Star, the Bronze Star, 3 Purple Hearts, the Audie Murphy Award. You can read about all of this on Klieb's website, which we're going to put in there. But you know, of all of these awards come a great responsibility, and these are earned. They're not given. You've earned it, and I know that you speak so wonderfully, reverent almost, I think is the right word, of those men that you lost, and especially those who helped keep you here for this mission.
Well, I brought them all back that are still living to the commission of the ship, and we had them all in Charleston with us and had a great time together. Man, I owe my life. I mean, you know, and not many people can say that, but if they had risked their lives and 2 of them gave their lives and 8 out of 11 were wounded, I wouldn't be here today. So I owe them so awful much, and they know that, and I know that. But, you know, it just that's one thing about the military. A uniform's green, blood's red. It doesn't matter. I had Mexicans. I had Indians. I had blacks. I had whites. I had everybody. And we all fought together, and I think anybody on that hill would have died for anybody else. And that's just the way it is, and that's one thing I like about military training. And especially Paris Island, what they teach you and rebuild you as a person. And you go down there with all kind of crazy things that you grew up with and all like that. They rebuild you. And it's a tremendous experience. And I wish more young people had to go through it. I think we really cheated our young people today when we don't have them serve. I think discipline is good for anybody. I think boot camp is tremendous. And that doesn't mean you got to fight a war, go shoot somebody else or something like that. It could be medically, it could be militarily, it could be Peace Corps, plant crops, clean up after a storm, a hurricane, a tornado, whatever. But in some way, give of something to somebody else. And I think we've taken that from our young people today. So many of them are bored and don't know what they're doing and want to be on a computer or an iPad or a telephone all day long. There's a lot of people out there that need help. And if we could just get our young people out caring about somebody else instead of themselves, we'd turn this world around, I guarantee you.
What surprised your children the most about your story, the older they got? Because, I've interviewed so many vets over the year, and their kids always say the same thing. They go, I had no idea. Have you heard from them? Have you had that conversation with your own kids?
Well, I do with my great girl. And my daughters never knew me without her. when it had two arms and two eyes, you know, and so they've always knew I was different. But they've heard me talk, and we traveled. We drove a Trailways bus 2.5 million miles and lived in it, so we're pretty close. And we took grandmother with us, 89 years old, but she went home with the Lord. And man, her influence of dating in a horse and buggy and the way she grew up and so forth and all, her husband's engineer on a railroad and carried the troops that got off at Yamasee to go to Paris Island for training. And those old tales and all of old people, and just listening to them. And when you drive it all the way across country in a Trailways bus rebuilt for a home to live in, you get real close. And I think our young people today just have not spent enough time with their grandparents or with older people.
Yeah, and of course your kids always find stuff out about you in those moments that you talked about touring. You did. You toured all over this country.
Yes.
And you had a chance to really see it and see it for what it was. And this probably comes as no surprise, but I mean, I'm guessing that you miss it right now with all of the COVID stuff that's going on. You're still out there touring at a smaller scale, if you will, but you're still out there. You're still involved. What are you looking forward to when all this is behind us?
I'd like to get on the road again. I'm getting older, so I don't know. We won't travel like that with the bus, but we will. My wife has Love in a Box, and when we can, Troops to the Beach. I have troops in my office, and right now, two apartments, staying in there with their families, and we do that a lot. But we've been taking this week, past weekend, we took a ton of stuff up to Lejeune. The week before, we took it down to Kings Bay and where the submarines are down in South Georgia, right there in Jacksonville. They can't go home, but they couldn't go home for Thanksgiving. They can't go home for Christmas. They're locked down. And it's tough when you serve and away from home and you can't go home for these holidays. People don't realize that right now. And, you know, you could just get your church, get your school or whatever, and write a card and thank these men and women for serving our country and what they're doing. You know, you're on their bases and all over the country and all in your air shows. Just think, if you can't go and see, and this time I think a lot of us are not going to go and get together with our families and all. And that's a hard time, especially with the troops that as many hours as they're putting in and being deployed as much as they are, not to be able to go back with their families on these holidays. So that's what we're doing right now.
I think that's wonderful. And, you know, you can say what you will about this time, but it has. It's given us a chance, though, to, in an odd way, to just slow down a little bit and to look around us and to have some time. Everybody talks about how busy they always are. And if you make your living on the road, and if you make your living being out with other people, you have had a chance now to really come back home. We're doing virtual school a lot of places. A lot of folks have had more time at home this year than ever before. And I can't help but wonder if what you said earlier, that people just need to take more time. You can't help but wonder if this year is going to be one of the best years of our lives or if we're just going to remember it for the pandemic. But for me, I'm going to remember it for what it was. And it was a great time to be at home, a great time to be around family, close family, immediate family, and a time to really appreciate what we don't have right now, and that is the fellowship with our outside community.
I agree with that. You know, I think the thing for my life comes from God's word, John 9:4 says, I must work the works of him that sent me while it is still day. The night cometh when no man can work. And I've just gone and gone and gone. And man, it's the day I've read books. I read a book a week anyway, but I've read books and more. I've listened to tapes. I've had time with my family, talk with them, listen to them. Children, grandchildren, and that has been good. There's no question about it. And you look around. I started golf a few years ago, and Billy Casper visited me in the hospital, and God used him all the arm off, and didn't know if I'd go walk again, and so forth and all. And he came by and encouraged me. And I tell people, man, don't get so important when you can go to a hospital where somebody's been in a car wreck or had leukemia or sick or whatever, and visit with them, and because they need to be lifted up and need a note from you, a call or visit or whatever. It means a lot to have these people come by. And we got time to do those kind of things now. And it has been a blessing in a lot of ways, no question about it.
People seem to have, especially professionals, they're going to have stories of these Zoom meetings and all this virtual stuff that we've had to do this year just to make do. But right. People have an understanding now that I think our ancestors probably had and knew even better than we do. When you work from the family farm, when you're working from, I'm coming to you from a 100-plus-year-old barn right now. When right. you work in these situations, there's a different rhythm to life. And it's a rhythm that we've often forgotten about, and it starts right here at home, and it starts in small towns and big towns, but it starts with this family unit, this nuclear family unit. And I think that what you're speaking to is so important, and it's just a good reminder that it's so important to get back to that and to appreciate it for what it is. And it's hard. I mean, it is hard, but so is playing golf when you have one arm. Tell me about that. I got to hear about this. You said that. I thought, I didn't really think anything about it. And I said, no, wait a minute. This is Kleeb telling me he took up golf a few years ago. You just like a challenge, I guess.
Well, Billy Casper visited me in the hospital 50 years ago, and he's the only one that came back then. Nobody came. It's not like today they go autograph and take pictures and give you jerseys. Nobody came back then and doing Vietnam and all the demonstration. But he was playing golf. Billy Casper was playing in Japan. And all hundreds of us, I think 600 in one, almost like a gymnasium laid out there in this hospital at Camp Drake in Japan. And he said, somebody, I'd like to see some of these wounded warriors. And he came in, I didn't know who it was. Well, I was in tubes and all blown up. And he was going from bed to bed and putting a little card, sort of like a deck of cards with a pitch on and sticking them, handing them to him and all. And I couldn't use either arm or leg or anything. He stuck one in my shoulder. They told him not to come to my bed. I wasn't going to live anyway. He said, I want to see him. He came over. He looked at me, stuck the card under my shoulder. And he said, man, I love you. Praying for you. God's got a plan for your life, and don't give up. And I'm not a quitter, but at that time, my face all blown off, my nose off, eyes shut, blown out, the other one, I think the half sewed up and so forth. I just figured, man, if I could die, they thought they were going to take my legs off. My wife would do a lot better. We had been married long, and I knew she could do a lot better than me, and I just gave up. And if he hadn't come and told me that God's got a plan for you and don't quit, I wouldn't be here today. Well, anyway, I told my next-door neighbor, who's Jay Hosh, that during the summers he's got a house next to his inn. I told him that, so he lined it up in 2014 for me to go to the Masters and meet Billy Casper, 48 years later. Wow. And we met, and they wrote it up in a golf magazine, and nobody knew I was there or he was there or anything else. So we hugged, they took pictures, it was unbelievable. And got to know him and later spoke at his funeral and whatever. But after that, I said, well, I'm going to start golf. And I really have enjoyed it. I've met some great people and enjoyed being on the course. I'm not real good, but I'm sure having a lot of fun. And it's the beauty of the course and that kind of thing. And talking about being at home this year and all, just on golf courses, you see people in their backyard, got little gardens, got home projects, building things that they've never had the time to do, but they're not working, they're not traveling as much and so forth, and they're home. And all kind of little projects and all, and things that need to be done around the house and that you'd like to do for your family. A lot of it's been done, mainly just because of what we're going through right now.
What do you want people to know in these dark times that we have so many soldiers going through right now? They're coming home, and everybody talks about the greatest generation, but, I know them so well. I'm married to one of them. They have been at war now for over 20 years, the folks who are currently serving. And there are a lot of dark times, and we talk about how hard it is virtually right now to do school, to do work, to do all of this stuff. But I mean, there are folks sitting in a room right now, in a dark room, flying missions remotely. And later this afternoon, they're going to be at a soccer game. And they have such a grasp on this 1 foot in one world and 1 foot in the other world. But not just them, but all of these folks who are currently serving and going through this, dealing with everything that they're already dealing with, but now you whop on all of the restrictions that are in place. What do you want them to hear right now from you?
Yeah, I think he's smarter, stronger, faster, better looking than we ever dreamed about being in the past. You talk about the greatest generation in World War II, and they were. But they had everybody behind them and everybody served. That's not true today. Today we got folks that have chosen to serve, and I'd say for every one person serving today, I had 10 serving for every one. And these have got to do it all. And I don't know how the world they do it. I really don't. And then come home and the wives haven't run the family. They've been deployed 8, 9, 10 times and all over the world. And it's really hard on them. They're doing a great job. They really are. But it's amazing the hours they're putting in. And they're not just gone from home when they're deployed overseas. They're not home when they're home, because I'm in a few bases all over the country. And they're working day and night. The things are so sophisticated tonight. It's the kind of things they've got to handle. I mean, most of my Marines, me included, I couldn't handle what they're doing. They wouldn't even probably take me. I wouldn't be smart enough. These guys are really smart. And to study and to keep all this stuff going that they've got to keep going, it's just amazing. I said, King's Bay, I don't know when you talk about it or not, but they got dolphins and sea lions guarding these submarines underwater. And they trained by SeaWorld people. And they got nuclear weapons on these subs and everything else. And all this is, they in charge of all this stuff. Sergeant Major, that's one of my best friends. He's got 600 Marines and 600 sailors. And that's who we just took supplies to down there. And then they got these sea lions and dolphins helping them out. And, man, we didn't have that kind of stuff. It's amazing what all they're doing today. And the hours that they train and what they put in to keep us free today, it's unbelievable.
Well, Kleeb, I think you're right. And I want you to end it with today as we wrap this up. Would you give us the Kleeb McCleary number one rule, the wisdom that you have come to learn, and the knowledge that you've gained after all of this that you've been through? Give us your mountaintop moment. Would you do that in the last few seconds here of the show? What do you want people to take away about Kleeb McCleary when it's all said and done?
Well, you know, I think what I said, in this world of give and take, there's not enough people willing to give what it takes. That pretty well wraps up what I try to stand for. But my dad was a great man, and daddy said, if you go work hard, if you go play hard, if you go pray hard, anything worth doing is worth doing well. And I think that's what we need to do. Give it our best. And when whatever you're doing, whatever God's called you to do, give it everything. And let me tell you, respect your wife. People don't know all that she's done. If they have to give a Medal of Honor for a wife, my wife deserves it.
Well, Kleeb McCleary, I thank you for being with us this morning. I look forward to playing golf with you.
Looking forward to it, man. We'll do it.
You go on to the next call here. It's a busy day in the Kleeb McCleary office. I'm glad you spent a few minutes with us. Thank you again, Kleeb.
Kleeb McCleary. I hope it went all right.
Yes, sir. God bless you as well. Kleeb McCleary, you can find out more about him online there at his website. It's going to be linked in this show's story. By the way, if you haven't already signed up for the History Worth Saving newsletter, please do so. We would love to stay in touch with you. I think this is going to do it for this year. We're almost at the end of 2020, a year that has been just so incredible for so many people on both sides of the spectrum here. It's been good. It's been bad. It's been unbelievable for some to have this time together. It's been unbelievably painful. The stories that we have from 2020, they're going to be with us for a long time. But they're part of it. They're part of this history that we have here in this great nation of ours, that I still believe in, and that I hope you do too. If you have a story for 2021, would you send it to me? Maybe it's something about what you've been through during all of this, or somebody that you know. I want them all. I want to hear from you. So please send me a message. You could find my email. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Instagram. But please send it over to me. That is truly history worth saving. Thank you again for being here. Thank you for supporting us this year. just by sharing the newsletter. That helps tremendously by building that contact list. You know, social media today, it is so tumultuous that you have to go at it on your own. And that newsletter is our lifeline to you. So thank you for that. By the way, I've had several people ask, the audiobook is coming. It is coming out. I'm back on the farm. We're back in, you know, the virtual COVID state as this peak happens. So yeah, got some time to work. We're going to get it out. The book's almost been out a year now. If you haven't already seen it or gotten a copy of it, please do. Every nickel goes right back into the business and helps. Have a great Christmas and a wonderful rest of your December. So long for now, everyone.